We're holding in the middle of Perek Zayin. That's the Perek that deals with prophecy. We saw last time all of the different what happens to a prophet when he has a vision of prophecy. Basically, the bottom line is there are four things about the qualities of normal prophecy, and they all are about the Navi. Is overwhelmed by the prophecy. He becomes like a crazy person. It has to be in the darkness at night. It's in a vision. He loses control of himself and so on. Those are elements that are true about all the prophets. And the exception, he says, is Moshe Rabbeinu. Vav. 6. Kol advarim shamarnu hein derech hanavua l'chol hanavim or yishon v'achron. This is true of every prophet. Chutz mimoshe Rabbeinu v'rabon shal kol Moshe Rabbeinu v'rabon shal gavurim. Moshe, who is our teacher and the teacher of all the Nevi'im. Uma hefresh yesh bein nevuas Moshe hanavim. What difference is there? Let's stop at this before we go into the details. Let's talk a little bit about outside a little bit about it. The Rambam here is going to fill in the details of one of the fundamentals of beliefs, which is that Moshe Rabbeinu is the father of all prophets. He's the greatest prophet ever lived, and the differences between his prophecy and everybody else's prophecy. The question we need to put down is, why is that important? Why is that a fundamental? We don't have saints. I mean, we have many, many saints, but saintology is not part of our, the worship of saints and the glorifying of saints and all these things is not really part and parcel of Torah. I mean, it is appropriate to respect the person, what he is, to learn from his actions. Why is it a fundamental belief that Moses is greater and there could be no prophet as great as Moshe? That's the question. And the answer is, let's take it at the simplest level, is two very important elements. If all prophets are equal, then Moshe Rabbeinu could be overridden by another prophet. And you never have a clear Torah. So who's to say which prophet is right? When a Christian comes and asks you, why don't you believe in Jay, you tell him, Moses doesn't allow for that type of thing. They'll say, well, Jay overrode Moses. The right answer is that Muhammad overrode Jay. Muhammad was a later prophet and overrode him. And if he asks you, why aren't you a Muslim, you'll tell him, because John Smith, the Mormon, overrode him. There's no end to the process of being overridden by somebody else. And basically, it doesn't allow, so not always can tell a prophet is false, so you don't have an absolute standard for truth. So Moshe Rabbeinu, one point of it is Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy cannot be overridden by anyone else, and that's one. Two, we have a different way of looking at it. We can say, listen, it's like when a person comes along, let's say a guy comes along and he said, he saw this and this happen. I saw so-and-so hit this person. One thing I can say is he's lying. The second thing is I can interpret it differently. He wasn't hitting him. The guy had a bone lodged in his throat that was choking him, and he slapped him on his back. It was like a Heimlich maneuver to get the bone out. He was saving his life, not hitting him. They both look the same, in other words, but the interpretation is different. I can always, so if I come along and I can say God doesn't exist. I can say God exists but he never gave the Torah. I can say God exists and he gave the Torah, but Moshe didn't quite get it right. So unless I'm postulating that Moshe got it with crystal clarity and no ifs, ands, and buts, I cannot, then Torah falls apart also. You know, to render the Torah meaningless, I can deny God, I can deny God giving the Torah, I can deny Moshe Rabbeinu's transmission of it as being perfect. anyone will see. So believing in Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy, that it is absolutely clear as is possible, is one of the fundamentals of faith. That's why it's different than any other prophet. Every other prophet, prophecy was an otherworldly experience. It was something that didn't click with the person, which is great in terms of how far they were able to get, but it means it's never clear 100%. You know, whenever I'm out of my ballpark of competency, I make mistakes. So every nevuah is kind of reaching out, and that's why they saw it with some sort of mashal, and they saw it with some sort of distortion, because that's the way the metzius of it is. Moshe Rabbeinu was absolutely clear, and that's what Moshe was. So he says, Kol Advar Shemana. So all these things we spoke about, the styles of prophecy, and Derech HaNevuah LeChol HaNeviim HaRishayim VaAchrayim. Chutz miMoshe Rabbeinu v'Rav Moshe Kol Nevuah. Uma Hefesh Yesh B'Nevuah Sashem. What are those distinctions? So let's take a look in the Torah. The Torah is actually the source for this. To do that, I would need a chumash. That would be very helpful.
I'll get one.
Yeah. Get one of those big shul chumashim.
Rabbi, is it okay to write a star on, I heard that you're not supposed to draw luminaries and stuff.
No, that's only if it's a real full painting representation. The little stars you do on the side is nothing. No. It means a painting that sort of mimics the original is an issue. It's not, like a full painting. No, that's fine.
I saw maybe it was a very rock pit publication or something. I thought it said maybe there's an issue of even drawing things on paper.
But the issue is only when it's something full and real, not little asterisk type thing.
Okay.
Let's take a look at the Torah. Actually, it's important enough for the Torah to give this. It's in Baloscha. It's in a week and a half ago in the Sedra. It says like this: Miriam and Aaron came and they complained to Hashem, and they said that he's got it wrong. They complained against Moshe. They said Moshe Rabbeinu has stopped living with his wife. That's not true. A prophet doesn't have to stop living with his wife. We're prophets. We haven't stopped living with our wives. So we have a normal family life. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to go out. Vayoma, and he said, Shimon Advarai, listen to me. Im yir nevi'achem Hashem b'mara elov esvade. If there's a prophet, I appear to him in a vision. B'chaloma dababo. I'll speak to him in a dream. Lo kein avdi Moshe. That's not true of Moshe. B'chol beisi neman hu. He is faithful in every single space of my domain. Peh el peh dababo. I speak to him mouth to mouth. Umare in a vision, but v'lo v'chidos, not with riddles. U'tmunas Hashem yabit, and so to speak, he sees the image of God. Why aren't you scared to speak about Moshe? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells them, you know, it's a very, Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy is qualitatively of a different nature than yours. And he goes through the Psukim and he says, Moshe said, you all have to dream or see it in a vision. He is able to stand completely up and awake. Two. Kol ha-neviim al yedei malach. All the neviim, it's through an angel. Lefikach roin ma'ashen roin b'mashal b'chido. Moshe Rabbeinu lo al yedei malach. Shnema pel pel dababo. V'nema v'dvar diba Hashem Moshe panim al panim. In other words, communication is direct. V'nema, it says, so tumunas Hashem yabed. He sees the real picture that Hashem is trying to present. Kloma. She'ein shem mashal. It's not with an allegory or a parable. Elo roya hadov al buryov b'lochido al mashal. He sees it straight as it is. Hu shator me'idolov umarav l'vechidas. And that's what the Torah says. He sees it clearly without riddles. She'eino misnava b'chido al b'mara shor hadov al buryov. Now, this is also to eliminate the possibility of allegorizing the Torah. Another way, a person would say, well, just like when Jeremiah saw a boiling pot or a stick with almonds, they were not relevant to themselves, they were just a marshal for something. We can say that all the things God told Moshe in the Torah, so when God told Moshe in the Torah that you shouldn't, that Abraham had a son at an old age, it means that, doesn't mean that there was a person named Abraham and a person named Isaac, it just means that Hashem is always faithful to people that follow in his ways. It's just, you know, what they call fabulation. Yeah, sorry?
So then, doesn't this make it very problematic to say that, for example, the days of creation were not Pasha 24-hour days and things like that?
Well, the problem is, in the psukim themselves, there are inherent issues. There are two reasons why this how we would apply it to today's creation. First of all, the Pesukim says, Vayir Vayvoka, there was no sun, there was no moon. So how do we understand Erev and Vok in that context? One. Two, Chazal tell us, Torah Shabbat Peh tells us, that until Vayechulu adkan kvod alekim hastadava, mikam vela kvod molochim hakordava. Until Vayechulu, it is a description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way that is veiled and hidden. It is veiled and hidden. And the psukim themselves don't give us any information. How were the beings differentiated into different ones? They come in one shot, come from the other. It's if the Torah itself is telling us, I am telling you something that I don't, this is left unknown and ununderstood. But the rest of the Torah, when the Torah starts getting down to core history and story, a person can't say that when it says the Torah you're not allowed to eat a pig, it means you can't indulge too much because pigs are fatty which was one of the ways the Christians, they interpreted Torah as an allegory, these mitzvahs. So you basically have taken it all out of context. He did not see it, so we cannot say about any part of the Torah, and that's why you cannot make any part of the Torah, you can only understand it as being pshat, in other words, this is what it means, that's that. That's what the Torah testifies, that you see it in a clear vision, with it's not in riddle form. Next, all prophets fall apart physically, emotionally, when they have prophecy. Moshe Rabbeinu ain't okay. And the reason for that is because Moshe Rabbeinu what would have meant, if Moshe Rabbeinu were to fall apart when he gets the prophecy, it means he couldn't possibly understand it well. It's just like when I say, wow, I was overwhelmed by what he said, it's way over my head. So you can't possibly believe what he says over. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to assimilate it well because he wasn't overwhelmed by it. That's what it means, like you speak to someone else, you're on par, and you speak with the other person, there's a parity there, and you understand him well. So that's a third facet. And then finally, he says, Kol hanavim e misnabim b'chol eisha yirtzu. No prophet can prophesize when they want. Moshe Rabbeinu ainu kein, ala kol zman sheyachpots ruach hakodesh levashtoi unavua shor olav. Moshe Rabbeinu is someone that does not need, it's not ad hoc or infrequent. He doesn't need to get ready for prophecy. He's like an angel, ready for it at any time. And he says, this is the sense in the pasuk. What?
That Pesach Sheni?
Yes, that Pesach Sheni, where Moshe could say,
thinking, yeah.
Yeah. In other words, in any other prophet, it's when Hashem chooses. We spoke about it last time, why that's so significant. Moshe Rabbeinu is part and parcel of Hashem. Ubezeh hifticho hakel, shenema leich emor lehem, shuva lechem lo leichem, va'atapoa modi modi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, you, everybody go back to your tents, you stay by me. Holomadita, this teaches us, shekol ha-nevi'im, kshenevu'a mistalekes, when nevu'a leaves them, chayzrim la-holom, they go back to their tents. What does that mean? Your tent means your life. Go get a life. You know, go back to your home, your wives, your meals, your kids. Lefikach in a parashat Shasem. That's why a prophet doesn't leave his wife, doesn't separate from his wife, because he's a person also. Prophecy is an occasional uplifting, an occasional experience. It's not the person. Moshe Rabbeinu lechazer la'ol harishon. Moshe Rabbeinu never went back to where he was. Lefikach parash min ha'isha la'olam. That's why he left his wife forever. Umikol adayim lo, or anything like it. And the Rambam's most magnificent description, v'nikshura daita b'tzur alamim, his mind became tied to the foundation of the world, God, v'l'nistalik ha'hod me'olav l'olam, and the beauty of that relationship never left him, v'karin or panav, his face shone, v'niskadish malachim, became like an angel. Extraordinary description. Yes? Yeah, what are you doing?
Okay, my question, so I once heard there sort of this question of like, you know, people talk about Judeo-Christian values, but when you really think about when you take each to its extreme, right? So what we call holy, what they call holy is celibacy. That's their highest level. It's,
right.
You know, the priest that doesn't have a lot of physical interactions.
Right.
Whereas what we call holy is kiddush and kedushin.
Right.
You know, sort of like the wine and women, quote unquote.
Right.
So the question here is sort of like, but Maish Rabbeinu is the one that we look up to. So l'cha'era, it seems like almost.
Good question. The answer is cause and effect, which celibacy in itself is not a value, but being, it's not we told Moshe be celibate and that's how you grow. It's Moshe Rabbeinu was completely involved. It's just as if you had married someone else and you're completely involved with the other person, so you don't have, you're not able to bond with the other wife. Moshe Rabbeinu was completely bound up in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore, you know, let's give an example. If a person's Avodas Hashem starts by not eating, I'm going to be an ascetic, I won't eat, I'm going to sleep on pins, I'm going to this and that, that's not our understanding of Avodas Hashem. But if a person gets so involved in learning and in doing chesed and stuff like that, that he doesn't have much of an appetite to eat, then we see that as a big madrega. In other words, it's not the ascetism as the way of life, but the person, let's give an example. Imagine that I'm looking how to be successful in business. So I study the lives of very, very successful business people, and I take a look, this guy is a real hustler, that he never eats or drinks or sleeps like 2 hours a night, and that's his life. So I'll say, if I won't eat or drink or sleep at night, I'm gonna become a millionaire. No. This guy is so driven in business and it's so successful and so good at it, it consumes him. And you're putting the cart before the horse in that sense. So we believe Kedusha is to be found in when a person lives with his wife and it's sort of Kedusha, it's positive. It has Ruchnis in it. But as a person grows in Ruchnis and is Mizdabik in Ruchnis, this becomes less and less important to him, and Ruchnis becomes more and more important to him, and he draws back from it.
Yeah, but I mean, coming out of Parsha Shlach, that's the whole thing. Is like that the Meraglim, that their mistake, that they had well intentions, but that they thought that they should stay in the Midbar with the Anani Kavod and things. And Hashem said, no, dear B'tachtenim, you should go into.
But even in Eretz Yisrael, you find the difference in the 10 tribes who lived and farmed and had a very, very normal life. to somebody like Shevet Levi that didn't have that. In other words, there's madrigas, and certain madrigas are mechayev certain things. Somebody came and asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky that, or if he asked Reb Shteiman, that he found the Chazanish's tefillin. Is there a reason to, you know, like, should he put them on? Like, is it, will he get like kedusha or whatever it is if he puts it on? So Reb Shteiman answered him, if you're the Chazanish, then you ought to be wearing Chazanish's tefillin. Like it's not putting on his tefillin makes as holy as him. You know, the tefillin fit him, they don't fit you. You know, it's a hanhaga that's appropriate for that person as a result of what he's holding, not the other way around.
Right.
So, it's a Gemara gives you, the Gemara gives you a handful of people that didn't get married, Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, and it's understood that some shot them that they got married, but those are all they didn't get married. It's understood not because the not getting married was a good thing, but they were so absorbed in the Torah that they couldn't get married. They were out of it. But I want to so he says that Moshe Rabbeinu was so tied to it and so bound to it that you know he couldn't he was always there. I want to explain the significance of that as well. Anything that happens occasionally is not you, and therefore it's lacking. If I tell you, you know, it's lacking in my understanding and perception if I only interact occasionally. So one simple way of understanding this phenomena, why Moshe was always on call, was that it was another way of expressing the fidelity of it. If I tell you that occasionally I do music, that means I'm not a musician really. If I tell you music's my life, then you can sense that. So it's another way of complimenting the not falling apart and all those things. There might be one other way of looking at it, another element. I think it would be as follows. We explained last time that the idea of prophecy coming sometimes yes, sometimes not, is because when I have the other, the fact that it's the other is expressed by that. So let's give an example. You have a wealthy man. A very wealthy man, and he interacts with all types of people. So you get an appointment, you spend time in a meeting, and there's a time slot for everything, and nobody gets all of his time. You know, there's time for this business, that business. There's one person that has all the time with him, and that's his butler. Because it's him, it's not the other. The guy who's coming to do a deal with him is the other. The guy who's coming to present him a new mishagas to get into, a new entertainment, a new tchotchke, whatever it is the wife. That's the other. But the butler is me, and therefore it's always on my behalf. Every prophet is a makabel from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, he is the first person to hear the message, which is great. Moshe Rabbeinu is the spokesman for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why the Pasuk says, Bechol Beisi Neman Hu. He is my guy. He's and therefore, when I hear from Moshe, let's take a difference. Let's say the president makes a statement. And the reporter hears it, and I hear it from the reporter. So that, in a certain, is hearsay. I heard it from the reporter, or heard it from the president. But when I hear it from the spokesman, theoretically I heard it from the president. You know, the spokesman's words are the president's words, unless the president says he was misunderstood, which on occasion that's what happens. But we need to understand that. Most other prophets heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the reporters. And the way to describe that is always or sometimes. When I hear from the other, it's an occasional phenomena, even though it's many times. When I'm a spokesman, I'm always a spokesman. I'm the president's spokesman. So I say, Moshe Rabbeinu is the president's spokesman. Okay, I want to add one more point, a little bit of a deeper point to explain this difference in Moshe and others. We said that Moshe is the only one, and the reason is no one is like Moshe. The reason we said is a very, very practical reason. If you have another guy like Moshe, who do you trust? Who do you believe? I mean, it allows for 25 Torahs, and there's no end to it. And that's a very simple, practical reason. There's a deeper reason, and let's understand what that is. The Rambam says, when he formulates these ideas in his introduction to Chelek, which is where he lists the 13 fundamentals of faith, he says we have to believe that Moshe is the father of all prophets. And like it says in the Pasuk, Navi Kamoni Yochem Mikibecha, a prophet like me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give. Now, what is the point in saying, why do we have to believe he's the father of all prophets? So one thing is that Moshe is the only person that we believe. Every other prophet we believe because Moshe said that when a person comes along and brings miracles and so on and so forth, believe him. This is a point the Rambam is going to be making in the next Perek, and we'll see that. There's another nekuda in Oimek HaDavar, and it goes like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu has one message. HaKadosh Baruch Hu interprets that message in many, many languages, in many ways. Just like in the Torah, you have 70 ways of looking at the Torah. And you know, each aspect has the times when it's valid, and times when it's not valid, and times in its framework and so on. So you have Memtes Panim Letar, Ayin Panim, and so on. Moshe Rabbeinu is the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message. From Bereishis to La'ena Kol Yisrael, those words, those letters are absolute. They are one. They are true. They're always true. And any which way you interpret it, as long as it's within the interpretation that's meant, is right. So if you count the letters, and you count the gematria, and you say pshat, and you say kabbalah, and you say remez, and you say philosophy, those words will be able, it's like a diamond. You can look at it at many, many different facets of it. So the Torah itself is the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the message in its unity that includes everything. And that's why Moshe is the father of all prophets. He's the source. It's just like there's no way a child can possess a characteristic that the father didn't. The father may have had it as a recessive gene. He may not have expressed it. He may not have brought it out. But there's nothing, you know, it's obviously the father and mother. But there's nothing that any prophet has that Moshe doesn't have. So no prophet could possibly contradict Moshe, just like no child can have a trait that parents don't have. You're coming from me, so your prophecy is has some sort of aspect that is relating to my prophecy. It can expand on it, it can explain, it can explore, many, many different ways of it. So that's a deeper understanding of the relationship of Moshe's prophecy. So there's a very pragmatic reason. In other words, we need an absolute standard, and without an absolute standard, it won't work. I once heard from Yaakov Weinberg. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, fascinating person, and he was speaking in Eich HaTorah. Reb Noach Weinberg was his brother. And he said, Rabbi Yaakov spoke about this point, I don't remember exact details, but he said, if prophets were equal to Moshe, and prophecy could continue to promulgate law, we would never ever have a real Torah. And he said, Rabbi Yaakov said kind of semi-sarcastically, he said, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it was at that time, he said, I said a prophecy. Rabbi Yaakov said about himself. My prophecy was that within 5 years, the Mormon apostles, you know, the board of apostles, that's their high group, and they contend that they have prophetic visions that guides the movement. So he said, I said about them that within 5 years they will have a prophetic vision that black people are to be admitted to the church. And he said, and sure enough, he said it didn't take 5 years. Within 3 years, they had that vision, and you know, because it was simply a feedback of the Metzias. He said, you bend and bend and bend the rules, you know, to fit, and you project it as prophecy. He said, unless there's an absolute standard that won't let itself be bent, it's one of the logical issues. When you have a movement that's reform, you need to ask yourself, for reform to be a valid movement, or anyone, you need to ask two questions. One is, what are those principles of yours that are inviolate, and how are they distinguished from other groups? So let's say we, as Shoma Torah Mitzvahs, the Torah, however you describe it, Chamish Chumash Torah with the Gemara, is inviolate, and that distinguishes us from other groups. But if Reform says what's inviolate to us is that people ought to be good and do good, that's great. How does that distinguish you from a decent Christian, from a decent Muslim, from a decent human being who's an atheist? There are not many, many movements. On the other hand, there's nothing else almost that's inviolate. Is Shabbos inviolate? Well, Reform had a Sunday, and then Shabbos became popular again, so it went back to Shabbos. So anything that's flexible is not who you are. To define yourself, you need something that is absolute and is also distinguishing of something else. To say what's absolute about you is that you're human, that's true, and we hope you'll never turn into something other than a human being, but it doesn't distinguish from other people. On the other hand, if you tell me that what's absolute about you is that you wear, what distinguishes you from the other people is that you wear a checkered shirt, well, you may actually someday change your shirt. So it's not, you know, those are two things. Moshe Rabbeinu is the inviolate part of Yiddishkeit. That's the nature of his prophecy, and that's what he got. Okay, one more piece and we'll finish. Zion 7. Hanavi efsa shatir nevuasa la'atzum bovad lachiv libo o lahosiv daitoi at sheyeda mashlaho yodea moisa dvar magdolim. He says, a prophet does not mean only a messenger sent to people to tell them what to do. Prophecy is a spiritual attainment of understanding. In the Rambam's world, the understanding of God, his manifestations, his attributes, everything about it is the single most significant part of spirituality. And therefore, prophecy is an enlightenment that strikes a person. An enlightenment for yourself, for your own sake, is significant no matter what. He says, "Ve'efsha sheishulach la'ameh ma'aret alen she'ir mamlacha lebonin lekonin osam oladiyah mayasu olimno osam ayisur hamshavideihem." He might be sent to people to instruct them, to tell them what's right, what's wrong, what they should do, what they shouldn't do. So he says like this, when he's sent to people, when he's sent to people to give him a message, then he has a pass. We give him a miracle. So a prophet as a miracle worker is only necessary when he is being sent on some sort of mission. When prophecy is for your own enlightenment, knowledge and understanding is what it's about. Miracles is not what prophecy is about. But when a prophet comes to me and he says, let me enlighten you, I say, okay, where are your credentials? I need something. And that's why I need to bring a sign. And I'll explain later what the signs are. But he says, so the first thing is, so the Rambam, the first thing he's putting down is saying is, it's not, the core of prophecy is not the sign or the miracle or the prediction. That's a necessary piece when he's coming and presenting himself to everybody. We need to do that. Now he says, so therefore the flip side, it's not every single person that comes and gives a sign or a miracle that we believe is a prophet. In other words, every prophet brings a sign or a miracle, but not everyone who brought a sign or a miracle is a prophet, because that's not prophecy. Somebody that we know, this person really deserves, this person is wise beyond, and he's the type of person that could be a prophet, and we see him developing as a Navi. And then he does the miracle and says, God sent me. This is a point the Rambam hammers home, and I think it's a point that's very relevant today. The Rambam has a few letters to communities that had issues with false messiahs. Rambam has a letter called the letter of Tchias HaMeisim, resurrection of death, the letter of to Taman, and so on, the letter to when they were forced to convert. He has a bunch of letters on, and one of them was there was a crazy guy who claimed to be Mashiach, and people asked him about it. And the Rambam says, not mincing any words, why would God pick a nutcase to make him a prophet? It's like, if God is picking someone to represent him, wouldn't it be somebody who's very wise? And therefore, this guy comes along, we know nothing about him. And one of the issues that we have, the Hasidic tales, the lore of Hasidic tales is, well, the great and important and significant rabbi wasn't so important, and this humble tailor nobody would think about comes, and he's possessed with divine spirit, and so on and so forth. It's not that it can't be, but you need to ask yourself, what was going on? Because he's an outcast or misfit, doesn't make him a prophet or a man of the divine spirit. You can say that there was an unnoticed great man, that's fine. But I need to be believed, I need to have a reason to think. And the same thing is true with today, you have all these people who are so-called Kabbalists. So to test him on his knowledge of Kabbalah, we may not be able to, but I need to have a sense, is this person wholesome? Do I really feel he's got his wits about him, that he's honest, integrity, scholarly, pious, and then I'm willing to trust him on the rest. But just because he comes along and wears mysterious robes and rolls his eyes and sells all sorts of stuff, why does it make him a Kabbalist? Like, why does it make him into a miracle worker? I mean, hello, God chooses people that are men of character, men of wisdom, men of genuine piety, and then I can say, okay, trust you on the rest. But if nothing else fits, and the only thing about the person is that he's strange, it doesn't make him that. And people don't understand it. We believe in great people. Great people means it's like a pyramid. There's real solid character on the bottom, real solid learning, real solid work on themselves, and the crown of that is the transcendental. But you can't transcend until you haven't actually been there. You've got to have all the flaws in place, then you can transcend it. But it doesn't start with transcending it. The only thing I know about the person is that he's weird, strange, off the beaten path. Well, that's all I know about him.
But can it be that he's drawing on some sort of like Ruach Tumah or something?
Well, if he is, then why would you want to get engaged in it?
Wouldn't want that.
Yeah. Huh?
Not that you would want to, but that...
It could be a charlatan. There's no... skepticism is very good. It says in the... The Rabbeinu Bechaya says that the reason for the mitzvah, for the prohibition to believe in magic and engage in magical practices, he says, because it's befitting that the people of God be wise and not swept up with stupidities. And to go along with every stupidity comes along, it's wrong. Skepticism is a very, very... I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu came along and he told Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to come and say God sent me. Well, they're going to tell me, who says? That's a very, very right question. And doubt, it's one thing when you doubt someone that you shouldn't doubt. If let's say somebody you have a good relationship for a few years, and then he asks you for a big favor, could you lend me $10,000? And then you say, well, I'm not sure. If he asks, you are sure, but you just don't want to lend the money. God did all these miracles. What's the skepticism about? Well, that's a problem. But when someone comes along and says, trust me, that believe in me. On what basis? I would say the difference, for instance, let's take three examples and to understand what the word belief is. Imagine somebody comes along and meets me and he says, could you lend me $1,000? I think about it and I say, okay, I trust you, but I want collateral. Your iPad is worth $1,000. I'll take it as collateral, and I'll trust you with $1,000. Well, I don't trust. That's not called trust. I mean, that's tit for tat, and I have your $1,000. Let's take a second case. A guy meets me in the park here, slightly unshaven, slightly smelly, and he says, "Hey, brother, can you spare $1,000? I'll give it back you next week." And I say, "Sure, I trust you." That's not called trusting. That's called recklessness. That's called throwing away the money. And that's not trust. I can choose to throw away my money, but that's not. Trust means I've done business with you. It's always been good. And the fifth time or the sixth time, the seventh time, am I sure you'll repay me? No. But I'm building on something. You know, so when a person comes along and he says, "Trust me, this is the right thing to do," I need to have a basis for it. I don't need to have it absolutely proven, but I need to have the basis for it. And if the person is a person that I've known and seen as being honest, wise, growing, so when he says, "I've transcended and God sent me to tell you to X, Y, Z," it at least makes sense. The Efshay says, "Sheyasu oisim oivs venenav." A person can sometimes do a miracle, he's not a prophet. V'zeha ois yesh ledvarim begoy. Af al pi kein mitzvah lishmerli. Hoyel vadim godlhu v'chochem v'royin levur maminos ha-chaskosa. Rambam says, even if he's not a prophet already, but he's brought the sign of the miracle, he is a person whose character would lead us to assume that this person is of that caliber, then it's lishmerli. Shekach nitztavinu, k'moy shenitztavinu lachtech adin ha-pashayim k'sherim. So Rambam says here, his understanding of prophecy. There's a parsha in the Torah. How do we know? Let's pose the question. How do we know a prophet is telling the truth? The answer is as follows. It says in the Torah, in here. So it's in Shoftim. Okay, it says, I will cause a prophet to come by you, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you prophets like me, Moshe says, because you asked for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give you, to keep telling you things, even though you couldn't hear it himself, and I will tell the prophet what to say, and so on and so forth. And, you know, he goes through what you're supposed to do with a prophet. So Hashem said, if a person comes and he has presented the credentials I've given to you, you need to listen to him. So he's a person whose character leads us to believe he is worthy of prophecy, and he brings a sign, then the Torah commands us to listen to him, even though we're not sure, and even though it's possible he may not be a prophet. And he says, it's very similar to the way the Torah told us to listen to two witnesses. Are we 100% sure they're not lying? No. But the Torah said when two witnesses have been cross-examined, testified something, we must listen to them. Maybe they're lying. That's what the Torah says we ought to do. So let's give an example. Let's say somebody comes to us. I'm the manager of a bank, and a person presents to me the appropriate credentials needed to withdraw the money. He has picture ID, he signs a signature, and this and that. And then I prove that all of it's been forged, but it's a forgery at the level that the bank could not have detected it. So they did right. Our agreement was that when you identify yourself with a picture ID that I can shine a little light on and looks like, and the picture looks like you, and you sign a signature, I should give the money. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, under these circumstances, listen to a person. Listen to two witnesses that testify, listen to the person comes along. And as far as the truth of it, there's a pasuk in Tzav, it says, the hidden things are for me, Hashem says. You only deal with reality. If on the surface of it, you've done what you can do, the due diligence, and this is what's happening, this is what it is, that's what you have to listen to. So when a person asks you, how do we know the great court knows the truth? How do we know the prophet is telling the truth? How do we know? We say, we're doing right because we're following the procedure. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, if the great court decides this and this, listen to them. We listen. If two witnesses come and testify, you cross-examine them, they withstood the cross-examination, and it appears they're telling the truth, and people of good character, we listen to them. If a prophet comes along, and this prophet is a person of stature and character, he's learned, he's wise, he's been engaged in prophetic studies, and he's brought a sign, listen to him. If Hashem somehow managed to get somebody else with forged credentials, his problem. In other words, we deal with the reality that's in front of us, Hashem deals with the so-called absolute reality. Okay. Next week,